And welcome back. This is the News Roundup when we discuss the top news stories of the week. I'm Sean Corcoran, and with me in our Woods Hole studio here on WCAI is Sean Gonsalves. He's a news columnist with the Cape Cod Times and Cape Cod Online. One of the stories in the paper this week is about the snow budgets of the different communities on the Cape. And Sean, we've had one major snow event, and we've had communities blow, well, not blow, I mean, we needed to do it, but they spent two-thirds of their budget or half of their budget or 70% of their snow budget for the year. So what happens?
Well, this is, well, the good news for folks is that this is one of the, when it comes to snow budgets, it's not that unusual to go over budget because it's very difficult to know how much you're going to need to spend depending obviously on the weather, which is hard to predict, particularly in, you know, living this close to the water. But it's one of the few areas of town government where towns are allowed to overspend and carry a balance from year to year. So they sort of make mid-season, late-season adjustments. And fortunately, you know, we're talking about tens of thousands of dollars, which, you know, may sound like a lot, but in terms of a municipal budget, it's not break the bank material. And so most towns think that they can sort of, you know, do this, play this little delicate balance. But then again, you know, it does raise some questions when we're not even out of January yet. So, you know, I guess, well, personally, I'm hoping we don't get too much more snow.
Well, yeah, last time you were supposed to be on the point, you were stuck in your house. You couldn't make it down here. Communities have notoriously under-budgeted for snow and ice each year. I think across the Cape, the reporting out of the Cape Cod Times this week regarding last year, I think, 4.8 million was spent, and only 2.2 million was budgeted.
Right, and I suspect some of that has to do with you know, wanting the budget to look pretty good, and, you know,
hoping, yeah, it was a tough year last year.
Hoping
as well
for the best, you know, and it's all, you know, and every bit of money that they can use, especially, you know, in other areas, they're going to want to do that with town budgets stretched thin. So, you know, in some ways it makes sense that they would want to sort of have a low ball figure and then sort of adjust throughout the season if, you know, if they need to.
Right. And the storm that we experienced, it wasn't last week now, it was the week before.
Right. Hercules.
Hercules. That was interesting because it dumped a lot of snow, more than a foot of snow in most places on the Cape and the islands. And then it thawed.
Right.
And then it froze again, so you had this continuing event that required you to deal with the road.
Right, not just plowing, but then you got to get out there and sand and whatnot, so you're right.
Right, that's right. Let's talk about the Lowe's vote. That also was more than a week ago now, but a lot of criticism on the Cape Cod Commission regarding the denial of having a new Lowe's in Dennis.
That's right. And as Paul Nizwicki, the commission's executive director, said, you know, in cases like this where you have this kind of polarization and you know, observing these kind of things for years now over the Cape, this is one of the more contentious development debates that have gone on the Cape in recent years. There's been others, but this is, you know, kind of harkens back to when, you know, there was those big battles over whether or not Costco could come to Sandwich and BJ's, you know, ended up getting into Hyannis and you know, there was Walmart and these kind of things. But, you know, Patrick Cassidy, who did a story on, you know, kind of looking back over the commission's decisions over the years, one of the things that was interesting that he found was that, you know, these type of decisions have become less frequent. And in fact, the number of development of regional impacts that the commission has reviewed have really been cut in half in recent years. It used to be something like 20 decisions a year. Now they're down to about 9, which kind of reflects the evolution of the commission. There was the 21st Century Task Force that looked at ways of reforming the commission in various towns. And this actually comes into play in this particular proposal. In Yarmouth, in Barnstable, and Buzzards Bay, they have growth incentive zones, which are these sort of prearranged areas with the commission and towns that allow for towns to have a lot of wiggle room and know that in certain areas of town, you can concentrate development and you can bypass the normal commission review, actually commission review altogether. Dennis doesn't have one of these. And Paul Nizwicki, who had came in for an edit board meeting, had pointed out that had Dennis had one of these, this Lowe's probably would have been able to get built without commission approval. However, it was a close vote. And as most folks know, it was, you know, it really, you know, got people's passions going on both sides. On one side, you had people saying, listen, this is an area that's already developed in Dennis. They're talking about 170 jobs there, not to mention the construction jobs that it'll create and so forth. And then you had folks on the other side saying, yeah, but we're talking about a lot of part-time jobs, $30,000 a year. You really need about $60,000 a year to make ends meet on the Cape. So we're not exactly clapping our feet together about $30,000 a year jobs. In fact, one of the commission voting members, a young person on there, what's his name, Andrew Putnam.
Oh, from Falmouth.
From Falmouth said, for myself at age 23, I'm still in that age group trying to survive in a place where the cost of living is going up. What the Cape needs is not jobs, it's careers. That's a real concern among some folks. And then, you know, in the article that we had in the paper, if people want to go check it out, I think it's worth reading some of the reasons that were given for people who voted for approving this Lowe's facility and those who voted against it. But it's certainly continuing to reverberate throughout the community and, of course, gives a bit of momentum to a vocal minority, it seems, at least at this point, calling for various towns to pull out of the Cape Cod Commission, which would be a very difficult process, but one that at least some people think should happen, because they feel like the Cape Cod Commission has really choked economic development on the Cape. On the other hand, other folks say the Cape Cod Commission is the thing that's standing between us and is the thing that's preventing Cape Cod from turning into anywhere USA. So it's an interesting debate and one that I'm sure will continue.
I'm sure it will. We don't do a lot of crime stories here on the News Roundup, but I want to talk about the arrest of the past president of the Cape Cod chapter of the Disabled American Veterans. He was arraigned this week in Barnstable Superior Court, and some charges regarding money.
This is Richard Allen Trott, actually, and he was arraigned. He pleaded not guilty to larceny, but he's being charged. He was actually indicted by a Barnstable grand jury a month ago, and the case is being handled by Attorney General Martha Coakley's office, and they're alleging that he basically siphoned $125,000 from the Disabled Americans Veterans Organization for personal use between 2009 and 2011. Now, that's a charge, and they're saying that involved ATM withdrawals and checks made out to himself. He's saying that, listen, this money was to go to pay for these vans that are used to transport veterans back to, you know, from home to various services and so forth.
Right.
But it this is a real sad story in a lot of ways. I mean, and so in the process, however, when it came to whether or not he was going to be released on personal recognizance, the judge in this case, Judge Garrick Nickerson, had requested a criminal records check. And it turned out that he actually had been convicted of theft and forgery in Arkansas back in 1991 and actually spent 2.5 years in jail for that. And then there was also a fugitive charge that he had out of the state of Arkansas and also a contempt charge in Florida. So for that reason, they actually sent this gentleman to jail, Kane or and all. And although I think he was expected, I think he posted maybe $5,000 bail and was expected to be able to get out.
Cane and all, you mean he walks with a cane. I mean, he's an older gentleman, a veteran.
Right.
And as you said, you know, his attorney is saying, look, these are documented, legitimate expenses. He expects he'll be exonerated. But it was the veterans group that drove this. They're the ones who pursued the criminal charges
and that's right.
And went to the police about it.
And I think part of that stems from the fact that there was this civil case against Trott that was brought up by fellow officers that ended up being
unsuccessful.
His attorney says it was dismissed, but people who were involved in that civil litigation say, no, it wasn't dismissed. It was that that he didn't have any money for restitution, essentially. They realized that he wouldn't be able to pay it back, so what was the point in the civil allegations? But they still felt like there ought to be some accountability, and so then that's when they started to pursue the criminal charges, and now he's being charged criminally with this, with some, you know, potentially, you know, him going back to jail again, as he was in 91 for, it sounds like, you know, sort of a similar vein of crime.
We have just a few stories left on the agenda. I want to move through them quickly. One is good news out of the House this week, and we'll find out what came out yesterday when the final bill was passed regarding $75 million in aid for fishermen. And this is part of the omnibus appropriations bill, which I believe the Senate passed yesterday. Sean, $75 million sounds like a lot, but doesn't mean it's all going to Cape and Islands fishermen or even Massachusetts fishermen. It sounds like it's going all over the place.
It is. Money. It's going to different fishery disaster areas in Florida, the Gulf Coast, the lamb and salmon fishery. So, as you said, it remains to be seen exactly how much of that money will come to this particular region. I think Congressman Bill Keating expects most of it will, because this is the area that's been the hardest hit, he says. What I thought was the most interesting part of the story was that some local fishermen say, you know what, the money and stuff could be good, and maybe it is, and it's a little stopgap, but the only thing that's really going to help us is if we resurrect the fishery industry. And
that's
a tall order, but I just thought it was an interesting insight from some local fishermen.
Well, another fisherman, a fisherman out of Chatham, Eric Hess, said that he thinks that this money for older fishermen could really allow them, you know, the folks who really don't get a lot in terms of fishing quota, might allow them to kind of bow out gracefully out of the business that has become just so difficult, as the Times has reported, and certainly as we've reported here on WCAI as well. A lot of people are interested in a water fountain in Sandwich. This thing's iconic.
That's right.
And it's been closed. As we like to say, the bubbler is closed because of some construction at Sandwich Town Hall. We thought that was going to be up and running fairly soon so people could fill up their water bottles and such. Not yet.
Mother Nature and Winter Storm Hercules said, I know you were expecting this to be done. I know, I love that word. it was started in October. I think they were hoping that it would be done by December, but with the weather being as it was, so cold, they had to delay it, and now they're hoping that by the springtime, people can bring their Poland Springs to this spring and get some real spring water, and people love it. I mean, it's a beautiful area.
Yeah,
and
it's going to be even nicer.
It's going to be even nicer. There's going to be a little wooden bridge that was built by the Upper Cape Volk students. There's a new retaining wall. They're building a new little sidewalk and patio area. So once this thing comes back, I think it'll be, you know, new. It will be new and improved, and people will like it. But people really do love it, including me.
Oh yeah, do you travel from?
Well, not anymore. But I had in the years that I was working out of the Sandwich Bureau,
we
had a Sandwich Bureau, I would drive by it all the time, and I certainly have gotten my share of jugs of water out of
from
that
the
fountain.
Artisanal well.
That's right.
Okay, let's talk. I love this cute. It was a little story about lots of people on the Cape and potentially the islands who saw quite a meteor flying through on Sunday.
That's right. This is something that I would have been looking for. I wish I had seen it, but I didn't, because like a lot of people, I was sitting on my couch watching NFL football playoffs at this time.
Well, this was right around 5 o'clock. Now, that's not prime meteorite viewing time.
Right.
I mean, you're not that dark.
Right. So we talked to a Hyannis resident named Nick Franco. He was at the Hyannisport Club with his son. And, you know, they thought that they actually might have saw, well, at least the dad thought maybe it was a plane crash or something like that. Then the newsroom, our newsroom, started getting a number of phone calls from people saying, what was that? It was a UFO? Was it Nick Franco's son said that he thought it was a UFO at one point. And then it turns out that there were actually 100 of reports of this meteor sighting on the American Meteor Society website. And we also talked to Peter Kurtz, who is the treasurer for the Cape Cod Astronomical Society. He said he didn't see it, but that it's actually pretty common that meteors, you know, can be seen and sort of burn up in our atmosphere.
Sure.
And, you know, it seems pretty cool. It can be, I guess, scary also a little bit, but I find this kind of stuff fascinating.
Have you done any stories before about UFOs?
No, I have not, and I wish that I could.
most of us have done those stories, and they're really fascinating. I want to thank Sean Gonsalves, a news columnist at the Cape Cod Times and Cape Cod Online. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks,
Sean,
for having me.
And thanks to our other contributors, Tim Wood of the Cape Cod Chronicle, Nelson Siegelman of the Martha's Vineyard Times, of course, and Sally Rose of the Provincetown Banner. I want to thank you for listening to The Point on WCAI. I'm Sean Corcoran.
The Friday News Roundup on The Point is produced by Sean Corcoran. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter. The Point is a production of the Cape and Islands NPR stations, a service of WGBH.